Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 120 with John Fortney. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with John Fortney, we explore a number of interesting topics like the Kolbe strength-based assessment and how you can use it with your staff, how rural schools can approach innovation, and John's mastermind experience. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the content, I would like to take some time to thank the show sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. I know the owner and founder of School Spirit Vending. He is a personal friend and he brings hassle-free fundraising to your school. But even better, Matt has written a top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. He's given it away completely free. Get it at schoolzonepodcast.com. That's the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Well, hey there, Better Leaders. I am really excited today because we've had this scheduled for quite a while, this talk with one of my favorite people in the world. And we had to move up the interview, and then we moved it up again. And then this is sort of just impromptu happening. So this is fantastic. I'm here with John Fortney, and he is mastermind member number one and a good friend now. Actually, when I moved to Texas, I got to stay at his house. So that was a really neat moment for me too, just to connect on a different level. And, you know, I think we had, burgers and chips that night.
You did a mastermind, I think, when we were, while I was cooking. I was cooking in the background, waving at your crew.
I had a mastermind that night too. And then we just got to hang out, hear about the family and talk life and school. And I'm always indebted to you for that. So thanks, John, for all the hospitality and the generosity you've shown me over the year. So.
Yeah, no problem. That was a lot of fun. That was always too short of a visit. That's the only thing with those is when you get to finally, I felt like we knew each other forever, but that was the first time physically we met. And you're like, right. All of a sudden you're like, you're in and you're out.
Yeah, it was fast, man. I was trying to get down to Houston, Texas. So, you know, That was 10, 12 hours of driving every day. But so you're here, you know, we've been connected. We're friends and you're a school leader. So I'm so happy to be chatting with you about that today. And just curious, take us to the beginning, John. What inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Well, the funny thing is I kind of fell into it. My bachelor's degree actually is in archaeology. And the joke I tell people is that I got tired of being chased by pygmies with pointy sticks, and there's only so many gold idols you can find. But the truth of it was, is I got, like a lot of people, that, you know, I was big in athletics. So I kind of fell into teaching to coach. And then coaching got away from the field a little bit more and became more structural and trying to get more heavy into the academic classroom stuff. But I had, you know, different jobs and different opportunities. And then I was at a large high school in St. Louis where I was basically doing case management for 9 IEP kids. The school there, they track academics, discipline, and attendance. And if a student had a problem in 2 of those 3 areas, then I became their big brother, kind of seeing them through. A lot of, they called it an administrative liaison position. You know, we got to put those fancy titles to education all the time. But I remember sitting down with one of the assistant principals that I worked with, and he said I needed to go get my master's in administration because I was doing a lot of the stuff he was doing, and he saw that passion. So I went to the University of Missouri, you know, go Tigers, got to throw that one out there.
And
it was like going to revival. It was amazing. Got my specialist in administration. I'd actually had my master's in sports psych because I coaching was it. That's what I wanted to do. But, you know, when you become a head coach, you get involved pretty heavily in the administration stuff. So, but the specialist was amazing. I mean, being around like-minded people that wanted to take on the world and challenge the status quo. And every Saturday at lunch, we fixed all the problems of the world. And next week we came back and told people all the, it didn't work. What are we going to do again?
Yeah.
But I was in the classroom for 12 years and then just finished up my third year as assistant principal at a pretty good sized rural high school, about an hour and a half or so east or west of St. Louis, and love every day, get to do what I love every day. So I don't work a day in my life.
What do you think you love most about your school?
The relationships that I get to build with those kids. I mean, as an assistant principal, you know, obviously you do a lot of the discipline stuff, but you got to really find those opportunities to have those positive conversations with kids. That I really enjoy that. It always cracks me up being in town and you're getting groceries and a kid sees you and they're like, Mr. Fortney, you buy groceries? Yeah, sometimes. I've been known to do that. Sometimes I got to buy some food. But it's those things. It always cracks my wife up because I really have prided myself in building relationships, all the schools that I've worked at and athletes. And we finally went someplace yesterday where there was a young lady that had graduated from a high school about the same time that I worked there, and she didn't know me. And you would have thought, to my wife, she goes, I never ever in my wildest imagination thought that would happen. And I said, what? She's like, that there'd be a kid from a school you worked at that didn't know you. I know. I'm like, I know, I got to work harder. I can't have that.
Yeah, I don't know. You must have dropped the ball somewhere along that.
Yeah, she must not have been in my wing at all. I'm like, but she's like, I look familiar. So I tried to tell my wife that's a partial win. So that I don't get a full loss on that one.
For sure. She remembered you somehow, some way. Mm-hmm. Hey, so you were talking about going back to University of Missouri and getting that graduate degree. School leadership was kind of like revival. Can you tell us more about that?
Those programs, I love to learn. I constantly read. So being in an opportunity where I was around aspiring administrators like myself, but it was really awesome that, because we were led by people that weren't, and I say this not to ever insult anybody that was never an administrator, but it was people that had lived the world. They were walking the walk. In some cases, they were currently still administrators in districts doing high level stuff, or they had just recently retired. So we got away from we lived in theory because you have to start somewhere as a foundation, but we spent a lot of time challenging those theories and seeing how they morph. And so it was just an energy thing. I mean, very much the idea that there's so much more that we can do and trying to find those opportunities and really spending time trying to hone out what your administrative philosophy was and what your beliefs and your values are when they come to school leadership. And it was just a great congenial environment. I mean, we challenged each other like we do with our mastermind groups, which mm-hmm. I love so much, mm-hmm. but ultimately at the end of the day, we were all there for one mission, and that was simply to make learning opportunities better for kids. And so that kind of energy is infectious. Literally you walked out like going, all right, man, let's go, put me anywhere, I'll take it on.
Yeah, you're on fire. And recently you had an experience that you described in the mastermind that also I think really inspired you as well. Do you want to talk about that? I don't know if it was a leadership academy, but can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, Missouri has a program they call Missouri Leadership Academy. Like most states, I suspect, have the state Department of Education put on some kind of program, because I've seen it through Twitter, you know, where you're getting people together and they talk about developing leadership. So for Missouri, it's a year-long program. They had a three-day festival almost where we had different speakers come in. I was texting you during one of the speakers was talking about PLC stuff. I'm like, you got to get this guy on the podcast. He's amazing. And then you got to some more information. The whole thing, it was just, I mean, pretty awesome, because in a room full of people, one of the things that they do is they presented different schools types, like a evolutionary thing, kids get what they get, another type of school where, you know, kids have to avail themselves to opportunities. There's the, we're going to warm and fuzzy, we're going to make you feel good about yourself. And if you learn a little bit, that's good. And then this idea of finally the, you know, the whatever it takes school. And it was a powerful moment because we talked about, you know, what school did we grow up in? What school do we work in? What school do we want to lead and then ultimately send our kids to? And the speaker said for the first time ever, 100% of the people in the room, probably 120 people, all said they wanted to lead the kind of school of whatever it takes, and they wanted to send their kids to those schools. And so to him, it was a powerful moment. And that led right into the next day where we then did, they call it the Colby. And that was the test where it's not a personality test, but it's a test that describes who you are genetically, like how you're going to solve problems when you care about the outcome. And so that was pretty inspiring and informative. Some things, okay, doesn't shock me, but then when you start digging into it, I was labeled an entrepreneur personality. So I feel like, you know, anytime you can put a panure on something, that's pretty cool.
That absolutely makes you cool. So you had this entrepreneurial mindset in regards to education. What else did you find out about yourself after you took the Colby?
That I hate paperwork, which is, I told that to my principal and she laughed. She's like, yeah, I know. And then it was also how you solve problems. And it was so funny because the process that they described on how my type of personality solved problems was 100% to the way of looking at, you know, trying to brainstorm, looking at the data, looking past at what works, and then trying to come up with the most efficient solution that's going to get things done. And that's what I do with everything that I try to accomplish. And I never really, you know, it was never described that way, but it's kind of neat to see that stuff. And it's so different because there's no guilt on that. When you take the test, you know, they tell you you scored 100% and you're not comparing yourself to anybody else. Cause it's not like, you know, somebody may score it a little bit higher in a category, but that doesn't mean that they're better at a skill. It just means that they're a little more, they're more focused or they're more genetically set for that. So it's a little bit of a mindset shift, but that Colby is pretty cool.
So is that something like, obviously personally there's benefits. I'm wondering if you could describe, somebody takes the assessment, what are those personal benefits? And then if you're, you know, principal AP, how could you use this with your team or your staff?
You can do the one thing is kind of that, how, you know, the idea of problem solving, like an example was, so there's four categories. There's I don't have the form in front of me, but one of them was the idea of fact finding. And then there's like a follow through piece. And then there's a quick start. And then I think the last one was it's basically like a structural thing. And one of the superintendent that gave us our results said he was very high in kind of fact finding, which made him kind of a slower person to pull to make a decision. So what he did was he needed a quick start personality. So anybody that interviewed for an assistant superintendent job in his district took this personality test so he could try to find somebody that matched up to his needs. And then the thing with that too, then, is when you see that, then you're able to see what those strengths are. And one of the things that we did was they pulled four people out that were strong in each of those categories, like a standalone kind of category, and then put a bunch of things on the table and predicted with almost 100% accuracy how they would interact with each other and with trying to develop this thing. And that's what made it different, because it wasn't a personality pick. It was simply, this is how they're genetically wired, because they created a situation where we've got to create an education, a game. And it was awesome to watch these people interact, and somewhat comical too, because, you know, the quick start person is kind of that hyperactive kid, which was me a little bit, you know, and finally the fact finder person was finally grabbed stuff from them and said, all right, listen, we're going to organize this. And it was just neat to watch. So when you know those kind of things, and so we're talking at my school, maybe doing that because with our principal, and then we've got a new athletic director, figuring out then how do we solve problems? So that way, if we know how people are going to solve problems, then you can avoid trying to, one, taking things personally. And then depending on the type of problem, if it's a heavy paperwork thing, maybe our athletic director likes to do that. I don't know why, but some people do. And they, sorry, got to throw those in.
That's the yeah.
But, And now I can say it's not my fault. It's genetic. My Colby report says it so. But, yeah. But if you have a problem that's paperwork heavy, then you could hand that off to that person. Or if it was something that's, you know, when you look at, you know, we need a creative solution, maybe that's something they bring to me. If it's a organizational thing, that might go to my principal. Although I think she's probably more quick start than she wants to admit, but waiting to see on those results. And then you can actually request a Colby to Colby interaction. Like they'll compare reports, and they'll even tell you on how best to communicate with people and how to work with them. So it's pretty inclusive. The woman I think that created it, I believe her father created the Wunderlich test, which any of the coaches out there know that they use that in the NFL for things. So it's a kind of in that psychological family. But it was cool. That was 3 days in, man. I still have another 11 months of fun to do. So I'm looking forward to seeing where this thing develops.
Yeah, and it's exciting to see, you know, each week so fired up from just those brief meetings. And like you said, you have 11 more months. And for the listeners, you know, these assessments, whether it's a personal assessment or a strength-based assessment like the Colby, it's going to help you understand your people. And Jim Collins is famous for many things, and one of those ideas is getting the right people on the bus. But you can get John, who's definitely the right person to have on the bus. But if you don't understand what motivates him and what his strengths are, you could have him in the wrong seat, right? And utilize his talents and strengths in a way that's going to frustrate him,
and possibly have him wreak havoc or exit the bus because you're missing it. So these assessments are so important. And like John said, you know, you could figure out how to communicate, right? And figure out what type of task to give that person so that they can thrive. And it's your moral responsibility as a leader of your organization to understand your people and put them in positions to do their best kind of work, make their greatest contribution. If you don't get that, you're so missing what your role as a leader is all about.
Yeah, it's really powerful stuff. I'm excited to see kind of where these things lead. And they even, the one, I had one person that gave it to his wife, who's not an educator, but just so that way they do a business together.
Totally.
So they can see how best to interact. I mean, it's, when you get away from the personality piece, I think it's powerful because personality can change based off mood and level of exhaustion, things like that. And this completely focused on how you're wired based on you caring about the outcome.
This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com.
So since I know you, I know that you know, your one of your greatest strengths is that relationship building piece. And I'm wondering if you have any tactics or things that you do around your school that other people might not realize are important, right? But it's unique to you. It's a creative way that you connect with either kids or staff members. And could you offer us a tip or two in terms of developing relationships?
I think a lot of it just the trying to be in the moment, which I don't know if necessarily is something people don't do, but I really try to be intentional with seeing people. And I don't like not knowing somebody. Like an example, I went to a baseball game my first year as an administrator. And so here we are 7-8 months into my job and I'm watching the team doing a supervision thing. And I'm looking out on the field and there were four players on the field that I didn't know who they were and I didn't know their name. And so I looked, cause I had to look at the roster to see who they were. And that these were kids from my high school, only 600 kids. So you're thinking you should know who they are. So the next day I went into my secretary and I gave her these four names and I'm like, I need to see these boys when they have time, you know, like at lunch or whatever the case was. And I called them in and just to talk to them, just to say, I didn't like not knowing who you were.
Yeah.
So, and trying to know something, if you put the time in it, you can know at least one thing about everybody. And that was always the thing that cracked me up when I became a teacher is the idea that you've got to be able to have 180 different conversations with kids and keep them all separate in your head. So you're constantly in the mental Rolodex thing going, all right, I talked to Sally about her dancing and Steve about the baseball game and Mike likes video games. So I got to remember that he's a PlayStation guy, not an Xbox person. So we talk about that and you keep those stuff rolling, but those are the connections. I think those the authenticity of stuff. And I love kids. I love people. You know, I was blessed with a mother from Kentucky who doesn't know a stranger. My dad always anywhere we go someplace, I'll talk to somebody no matter where I'm at.
Yeah.
Try to make friends, you know, try to make a connection with people because that was the old salesman in me. I got into education late and I was a sales manager. And that's always that thing is you get people talking about things they're passionate about and the old adage that you can always learn something from everybody. So if you look at that idea, then I try to, you know, I've learned, had great conversations where you learn stuff. Sometimes the teenagers want to teach you stuff that you wish you didn't know. But a lot of the times,
right?
You know, especially with this age of technology, I've been able to head off more problems with some of our social media issues because kids are explaining to me where things are coming and when new apps pop up that could cause problems, you can hone in. But I think a lot of it's that intentionality, just really being very deliberate. And the other thing is engaging. I know it's a bad day at work when I spend so much time sitting on my butt in my office because either I've got too like paperwork to do or there's been a lot of disciplinary issues. And I just love being immersed and just enmeshed in that whole world of being around kids and where learning is happening. So that's my challenge to myself this year is trying to spend more time in a classroom. You know, you've got those principals and administrators that I've heard on the podcast that say that they like to take their laptops into teachers' rooms and they're not doing observations. They're just where the learning is. It just like that energy. And I really like that idea. So I'm going to try to do a lot more of that this year.
Yeah. That's the mobile office. So that's definitely a common thread that I've heard from a lot of high-level leaders, but, you know, I want to pull this out for the listeners and just remind them, I really appreciate your intentionality with getting to know those kids. You noticed that in your school, there were a few on the team that you didn't recognize who they were. And you didn't, it'd be so easy for any leader to just, okay, and tomorrow there's another day and I keep moving on with my business. But you made it a priority to have time to meet with those kids and get to know them a little bit. You know, I was surprised at my school, we raffled off two lunches with the principal. And each time I had lunch with four kids and the parents brought in lunch, it was so cool. And I said, no questions are off limits, ask me anything. And it was just a really neat way to develop relationships and get to know my students. But it's just surprising if you take the time, if you're intentional, you can build those really great relationships with kids. And you mentioned knowing one passion, right, about every single kid within the class. So I think I would be a terrible host if I didn't ask you, you know, what's something you're really passionate about right now or obsessed with in terms of education, John?
I think the thing right now is this idea of innovation. You know, when we had the conference a couple weeks ago, Luis Cruz talked about schools not being built for what we're asking them to do. And that we're supposed to hit a home run with every kid. So we got to try to figure out a way to start kids off on second base or higher. And that way they've got a better shot. And so a lot of the reading and stuff I'm doing is how do we morph this system into what we wanted to accomplish? You know, so I've been reading a lot on the innovation campuses and trying to, you know, flexible classrooms and, you know, mod schedules and just anything about the structural type stuff that I kind of enjoy. And figuring out a way to kind of enmesh that into a rural school that has limited resources. Because that's the big thing is whenever you do the research, you know, it's one thing to look at that theory. But the challenge we had at Mizzou was how do you then take that back home? You know, and that's the problem is we don't all have the same time schedule. We don't all have the same resources or the demands or even the values and morals and expectations of based off community. So it's how do I take this innovative mindset and take it to a place that doesn't hate change, but is resistant to change because change in the past has been bad. So that's been something I've really been spending a lot of time with and really have enjoyed researching.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's so needed, innovation in schools, because many, many ways, right? The typical average school, at least in the United States, is going to be archaic and outdated. And there's a number of reasons for that in terms of tradition, not wanting to change the community and the staff is comfortable with it. And then the challenge of resources. But the world outside of our schools in the States is changing so fast. The jobs are international. Technology is connecting everyone. If we don't change, I'm concerned how fast we're going to just absolutely become irrelevant for what we do.
No, I agree with that 100%. We've got to find those opportunities. I mean, it's been said 100 times that we're preparing our kids for jobs that haven't even been created yet. So we have to think outside the box. And now we think skills. What skills are they going to need? You know, it's not gone are the days of memorization, the rote memorization that I grew up in, where you could just regurgitate facts. Now we're taking stuff and it's critical thinking. What's good information? What's bad? And how do I use it? And then how do I innovate it? And I think the thing that's the other thing that we start to get away from along a lot of this stuff is the idea of compliance for just the sake of compliance. If that makes sense, we're not we have kids that we want them to act a certain way. We don't want them to challenge the status quo or question what's happening in the world. So we've got to find a better way to grow that. But so that way they can improve their interpersonal skills and kind of put down the electronic devices. Those are the things that we hear a lot from our local businesses that our kids are coming out with. They're great on technology, but they're not really great on problem solving certain things, especially when it comes to interpersonal relationships. So it's a tough sell. The next movement, I mean, I've heard a number of people say, you know, we're on the precipice of something great. And I really agree with that. But a lot of people are going to have to step through the door first and be willing to take the bullets to make those changes happen.
Conferences, piles of flyers, getting stuck in endless email lists and never-ending calls, there's an easier way to sort through and identify the best school fundraisers. School Spirit Vending proudly presents the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas of 2017. It's a guide of the top fundraising companies hand-picked from the best podcast. As an added bonus, this guide lists 5 resource companies that would add tremendous value to your community, school, and students. The best part is that School Spirit Vending is giving the guide away completely free.
Are you ready to simplify the search? Download the free guide at schoolzonepodcast.com.
So, John, I'm an urban guy, and I teach this productivity course, and I got called out last night because I was using this metaphor of birds and why it's so bad to let them out of the egg early, right? And if the bird doesn't struggle, the point of the whole metaphor in the story is you have to give, it's about delegation and the permission to not have things done the way you would do it, right? And it's an ego thing. You might think it's, you know, you could do it faster, you could do it better, right? But if you don't allow people to do stuff, even if it's at 80% of your capacity, they never learn, and they never learn from their mistakes. If I open up the egg and the bird doesn't use its own wings to be able to hatch, right? Then when it attempts to fly for that first time, it's not going to be able to fly and it's going to die there on the ground. So I'm telling this whole story, and somebody that has more of a rural background, they go, you know, those are chickens, the picture that you have, you know, in the story. So, but why am I talking about this on the podcast is because I'm an urban guy. Can you give our listeners, I think this would be really great value, how does a guy that understands rural schools then approach these ideas of innovation and change within schools, knowing the challenges a rural school faces with, you know, deep-seated beliefs in the community and struggles with funding and all that? How do you approach that?
I think you find your pilot teachers, or find people that are willing to do things in small steps. You know, there's a great movie, What About Bob, that he does, you know, baby steps to the bus. I played sport years ago, and the coach used to tell us, you know, small bites of the burger, you still eat the whole thing. So I think that one of the problems that I have to, as a, I know this about myself now, I'm a deep end of the pool guy. You want to make a change, I'm diving to the deep end, I'm going to wholesale it. And I think that that's where the problem lies, is that we've people go to a conference, and when we bring this idea back, and then all of a sudden we say, okay, we're going to be a PBS school this year. We're going to be, you know, writing across the curriculum. And not that those are bad things, but they don't become a permanent piece of furniture. And the thing that one of the things that we're dealing with was this thing called student learning objectives, where we were talking about what teachers, you know, the idea, like Missouri's the show me state. So the joke we tell at our school is, if kids are in your classroom, are they learning? And the teacher, you know, you'll want them to say yes. And then you go, okay, show me. So this is a mechanism that we're using, and it's taken a good foothold nationwide in certain pockets, but we had to sell it to our teachers in phases. So I had to find a couple of teachers that we knew would want to take that on quick, the early adopters. And then from there, then trying to talk to our teachers, like I have a great opportunity to work with the English department. I've got one woman in the department that has been in my school teaching for more than 40 years, which is, to me, is unreal that you've been in one classroom for 20 plus and one school for that long. But I know it happens. So to try to sell her with the idea of this and get over the, yeah, we did that in 1983, or we did that in 1996. You know, and try to find those connections. So that way they see the value in it. And then the other piece of it too is making sure that whenever you're going to make some kind of change like that, that you make people understand that you're going to do two things. One is you're going to give them the time to translate it for themselves. And then along within that idea of the time to translate it for themselves, gives them time to play with it. So that way, if there's not, you put the training wheels on the bike. And then the other thing is which is a time thing too, is that this is not something that we're going to switch in a year, that we're going to stay the path with this for a few years. And that way we get a longitudinal study, and then we can kind of see what the value of it is. We're doing a little bit of this. We've changed kind of how we process our curriculum a little bit more. You know, every state comes out with new standards, so you know it rolls into it. And because we did this process with our student learning objectives, the changes that we're trying to make with how we're handling our curriculum has been a little bit easier. And then also then when you have people that, when you have openings, I think you hire the type of attitude of people that are willing to have that skill set, that can then drive that mission as well, that are going to push things. So it's, I don't know if that answers the question, but it feels like we're, you know, I'm herding cats and juggling running chainsaws sometimes at the same time.
Yeah. It's a complex problem that you're approaching, but you know, I think you said a lot there, but just to remind the listeners, the importance of piloting, right? And finding your people, your early adopters, you know, like you. I mean, you're the first one to say yes for the mastermind, right? Mm-hmm. And you find that person, you run with it, and then eventually it grows. Because now, you know, there's 26 people at the time of this recording, and this is released, John, in November, okay? So this is episode 120. And so by now, I'm sure there's even more folks that we get to connect with and serve in the mastermind. Since we brought up that topic, I just love, you know, for the listeners to hear, because I talk about it on the show, you know, I blog about it and talk to folks on calls that are interested. But, you know, what's the experience been like for you within the mastermind? How would you describe it? And what have been some of the greatest benefits for you?
Well, I think very much like you in a lot of respects, you know, I was constantly searching for like-minded people to connect with. And so that idea that if Daniel Bauer exists and he thinks like I do, then there's got to be another person that thinks like us. And so that was something that was pretty exciting. When you have those conversations with people, it's real tough. But being a huge relationship guy, the ability to connect with somebody else that is battling a lot of the same stuff, but not knowing the people. And I think that level of objectivity, which is something that we had talked about early on, about getting to that point is really powerful too, because that group, I did not want to be part of a group that was just going to tell me, oh, you're doing such a great job. We love everybody's ideas and it's all fluff and stuff. I wanted to be part of a group that really was going to challenge me. And I wanted to be someplace where I could challenge somebody else, because some of the greatest growth happens when you push back on people and you force them to, that's like growing up in my house. You couldn't have an opinion unless you had facts. You know, we talked politics mm-hmm. at my dinner table and it was interesting and tough. And that's what a lot of that felt like within the mastermind. And then you get to know people, you know, and then watch them develop and you follow their success through Twitter and, you know, Colin and some of the people that are now doing other earlier podcasts, and you listen to them going, man, mm-hmm. so glad their life has gotten better. But I, you know, it's funny because I've got some administrative friends that they know, what do you do on Thursday nights? Cause I know on Thursday nights you said you're unavailable. I'm like, the best way I describe it is class, but it's so much more than that, because people understand, oh, you got class. Okay. You know, that happens every Thursday. But then they go, well, what kind of class is it? And then you try to explain it, and they're like, okay, the best way to explain it is the ability to get multiple people from around the country to connect on a topic and to really delve in. It's like that revival I talked about. It has that feel some nights where you walk away going, all right, let's go. Drop me anywhere. I'm going to take on the educational world and we'll bring it, because we, you know, we do the book studies. And then when you're on the hot seat, you've got to really be reflective and think about what problems you want the group to help you with. But then you also have to be mindful on those days when you're not on the hot seat, that you have to be the value added person. You know, every time somebody brings it up, it doesn't feel like it's so-and-so's problem. When they bring it to the hot seat, it feels like it's my problem too. And I've got to do a great job to provide them support, so that they, at the end of that 30 minutes, they may not have all the answers, but at least they'll have some things that they can think about. That then, and we've had follow-up conversations offline on Facebook and stuff too, that helps, and where we provide that support. But it's just this family feeling, and that's pretty awesome.
Mm, thank you. I really appreciate that description. And folks, you know, you can find out more at betterleadersbetterschools.com/MM for mastermind. John, what's one book every principal should read right now and why?
You're going to have to put the link up, but It's Your Ship is, I forget the author's name, but it's incredible. And that got turned on to be my wife. She's an administrator in the district and they read it. And that book talks completely about, it was a naval commander that was in charge of the ship, the Benfold. And he took it from the worst ship in the Navy to the best ship in the Navy by empowering his people, and rank didn't matter. We solve problems together. You know, the title, it's our ship. It's not the commander's ship. I'm a big guy in the pronoun thing. When I talk to somebody, I honestly listen to hear, is it my school or is it our school? Mm-hmm. Are they your kids? Or are they our kids? Cause I think that when they're, if it's our problem, then we are going to solve it. And if it's your problem, I can disengage and it's no longer my issue. So the idea of that is incredible. It's a fast read. And I've talked about it on the mastermind, and anytime I can recommend it to somebody, I do. I think it's an incredible book, and it's a great summertime reader.
Yeah, we'll be checking that out soon. So many people have recommended it to me. So yeah, the listeners know that will be linked up. It's Your Ship for you in the show notes. John, what do you do for fun?
I collect Darth Vader stuff.
Yeah.
You go in my office at school and it looks like a Darth Vader museum. I love Star Wars, but I love Darth Vader. I love to barbecue. So I'm trying to convince my wife to let me buy a new smoker grill, 'cause I've rusted that one through. And then, but right now my favorite pastime is I have a 7-month-old granddaughter. So I get to play grandpa and watch her develop and grow. And that probably is more fun than anything else.
What message would you put on all school marquees across the globe if you could do so for just one day?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think the message I would put is just show up. We'll take care of the rest.
Love it.
Sometimes just getting people into the building.
Mm-hmm. And John, this is the last question. I know you're a longtime listener, Mastermind member number one. You know this question was coming. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
At some point money will be in there, so I don't worry about that. I think that having a building that has flexibility, so that way we can change the size of the classroom based off the needs. Because some people like smaller, intimate spaces for conversations. So, you know, the flexibility with furniture and wall design. I think I'd want a school to be able to access experts. So, you know, Fortney School of Experts. So like, if we're going to talk about physics, we're going to have Dr. Sheldon Cooper from the Big Bang Theory show up and talk to about that. So that way they're learning from their teachers, but also then they get access to see what those people are and access things in real life. And then the other thing is it would definitely be a school revolved around massive community service. So where we take on we're going to clean up leaves, but like we're going to build a homeless shelter. So we've got to figure out how to do those things, or we're going to lobby the Congress for whatever. So we have to learn those processes. I think the next innovation level is more than just doing things like math, but like figuring out how that math gets applied. So maybe it's the Fortney School of Applied Education and Experts.
John, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what is the best way to get a hold of you?
Twitter is always a big one, at @JFortneyEDS. I live and die on Twitter sometimes too often. I love that. And that's probably your best way to reach out that way. And just parting thing is when you find something cool that affects your life, share it with somebody else, because that's how the system grows.
Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and John. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type John in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You'll get highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. John, thank you so much for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thanks, Daniel. Always have fun.
The Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.